people of Earth, this is Maddie and Anthony's World. Please go to our channel on Audio Boom on iTunes, like and subscribe, and leave a review. We like reviews. Give me the nice comments, and Anthony, you can say whatever you want. I mean, whatever.
What's that? Maddie and Anthony, the greatest friends that could ever be. Maddie and Anthony's World, they're great. It's great.
Hello, this is Maddie and Anthony's World. We're starting our show off here. Anthony spilled his coffee twice. So he is vacuuming. I'm not too sure why he's vacuuming because it's liquid.
Hey, guys. Sorry. Yes, I did spill my coffee twice. The reason.
What's with you today? Why did you do that?
I don't know. I think I'm on edge because I'm so excited about today.
The first time you spilled it, you just set it down and you're like, whoa, whoa. The second time, you're doing something weird with your chair, and you're like, check this out. And then you spilled the entire coffee. You have no coffee left.
I don't know what's going on with me. Spilling coffee twice.
Yeah, I know what you need.
What?
I brought a little surprise today that's going to help us relax.
Well, ouch.
You okay?
I just pinched my hand on the side of the chair trying to put it down. What is going on?
I know what you need.
All right.
Close your eyes.
Close my eyes. Are you sure you want me to do that? I'll probably hurt myself.
Close your eyes.
All right, they're closed.
Don't open them.
It better not be something crazy like a scorpion.
No. No talking either. Ready?
What? This is a podcast, no talking. How do you shush a podcast? All right, let's all just have silent. Let's just not talk on the podcast. That's what they like. First of all, we already got started with a great start. I was vacuuming. We had to start while I was vacuuming.
Okay, stop. Close your eyes.
Wind chimes? Oh, my God. What is going on? Can I open my eyes now?
No.
I'm supposed to guess what it is? All right. Wind chimes. What else would it be?
This is supposed to relax you.
Oh. Well, why do you have... All right, I'm going to open my eyes. Is that all right if I open my eyes?
Yeah, sure, I guess.
Why in the hell do we have wind chimes? Where did you get that? Did you just bring that?
Oh, my. We have it at our house. It's supposed to relax you. It's like a relaxing bell.
Yeah, it was relaxing enough. I mean.
Do you want me to stop? Or?
Yes. I don't want that in my ear. I mean, it's nice. Thank you so much. Is it a gift or is it just you brought it in?
I just brought it in.
Will you just put it back in the bag? You know what's the best is you surprising me with a thing that I thought was a gift that was actually just a wind chime that you're going to bring back home with you. Why did you take it away from your house?
Because it sounds nice.
So you thought
it
that...
It sounds good.
So you, all right, well, I mean... Isn't it supposed to be in the wind somewhere? Like, why
no.
is it here?
No, it's they use it for yoga. You know, after yoga,
I'm familiar with a wind chime. I've heard of them. I've seen them. Out of all the days you brought these wind chimes, which I do think are kind of cool, I am losing my mind. I swear to God.
Do you need a different chair?
I don't know what's going on. Like, the chair is uncomfortable. I'm putting it up and down, up and down. I have been here.
Got some tacos here.
Yeah, you. I don't think you want anything around me. I spilled twice the same coffee. The first time I saved it a little better. The second time, completely gone. And to answer your question, you said, why do you have a vacuum? It's because it was in the corner and I thought we would give it the go. All right, let's just relax.
It's liquid, though. I am completely relaxed.
No, I mean me. When I say us, I think it's time for me to relax. I do appreciate a wind chime. I do.
Do you want to hear it again?
No, I think.
Oh, you're good.
You put it away, and I think it should. I just am.
Would you like a taco?
Well, Maddie did bring tacos. He was generous enough to bring tacos. Do we really want to make another sound effect, though? Like, you're chewing in the mic now. We had wind chimes. I'm spilling things with a vacuum. I mean, I feel like we're.
They're from Guisados, our friend Melissa Villasenor, who's on SNL. Her uncle owns Guisados.
Okay. That's nice. I'm glad that we have that. And you know what? Why don't you chew and then maybe we'll switch off or something? Because there's nothing like two people chewing in a microphone after all that mess. This is Maddie and Anthony's world. This is the actual world we're creating, and I just heard gross chewing, and I hope it was
our
bit.
Sound engineer is chewing.
Oh, everyone's eating. I mean, we're here an hour. This is a literal hour we're here.
I like eating food.
Yeah, I know, but why do we have to eat in the microphone? I mean, we already have enough going against us with the wind chimes. I mean, I'm just kidding. They're really good. How are you?
I'm good. I woke up this morning with a chip in my hair.
Great. So
I don't know how it got there.
What kind of chip? Like a potato chip?
It was a sour cream and onion chip.
Is this true? I feel like you've told me the same story before, which is insanity if this is true that it's happened more than once.
Well, my wife found it. She said, oh, my God, there's a chip in your hair.
This is not a bit. You've had this happen numerous times.
I think so.
You think so? At least two times in your life, you woke up with a potato chip in your hair.
Yeah.
How big of a chip?
It was small. It was a small chip.
What's going on in your house?
Well, sometimes I eat chips in bed.
All right.
Or I go to sleep, and I think...
Bad move. That is a bad move. If you want to...
Do you eat any food in bed, though?
I don't think it's a proper decision. I mean, you're getting crumbs all over the place. Chips are greasy. It's stuck in your hair. You slept for at least 8 hours of your life. You were sleeping with a greasy old chip in your hair. I don't know. Why are we eating in inappropriate places? Why are we eating at a podcast? Why are we eating chips in bed? What is going on?
It's not inappropriate to eat in a podcast. It's not.
It's questionable because you're chewing. You know, it's like don't chew with your mouth open or talk when you're eating. You're literally doing it not only from the person behind you or in front of you like at a dinner table. You're doing it for all the ones that are listening to this show right now.
Well, they could be eating too.
Well, they're not on the show. They might be relaxing, eating chips in bed like you would. I am really on edge. I feel like I'm crabby. Well, anybody who spills coffee twice has to not be that happy, right?
Yeah. What's going on with you? What's up with you?
I just got back from New York, which was beautiful. I had a good time there. I saw the Statue of Liberty, went up close and personal on the Statue of Liberty, which I've never done before. What a beauty she is. I had no idea how beautiful she was. So I did meet her. When you look up, you're kind of looking up her dress, which is kind of perverted for everybody that goes there because you're looking up a woman's dress. Isn't that gross?
How did the Statue of Liberty get there? Do you know?
It came from France.
On a boat, right?
On a boat, in a big boat.
In, like, sections, right?
In a couple sections. I don't know how many sections.
Greg, do you know anything about this?
Oh, Greg Buckman's here. Greg Buckman, one of our dear friends, he always comes in. He's a bit of a show producer, food runner. He does everything for this show, including tell us fun facts.
He's not too sure how far to speak into the mic.
Yeah, he looks like he's ready to eat the thing. Greg, how are you?
I'm great, thanks. How are you guys?
Greg, you could stand up. The way he's talking to the mic, it's like a bird trying to get food from mommy. And that is definitely, he's looking up like mommy's dropping worms in his mouth. So, Greg, you don't
tweet,
have...
Tweet.
Okay, yeah, tweet. All right. So, Greg, you're making me uncomfortable the way you're sitting. You don't have to move your neck up. Just stand up or something or move the mic down. Okay, now he's adjusting his headphones, which is the opposite of what you should be doing. You should be adjusting the microphone.
Oh,
my God.
Wait a minute. Wait, I want to ask a question. Were you inside of her?
Greg, you know what?
Greg.
While you're making jokes like that.
That wasn't a joke. Did you go inside?
You know that was a joke.
The statue.
Do you know that was a joke?
Oh, my gosh. That was not a joke because she wasn't open for the day I was there. I didn't get to go inside.
Is this true? Is this true? So, Greg,
it's a true story.
Don't yell in the microphone.
They don't let you in sometimes.
So, Greg is not only yelling in the microphone, he's not only bobbing for the worm from Mama Bird, he's yelling at Mama Bird. So, Greg, let's talk for a minute.
Okay.
You are telling us, and I don't know if everybody knows this about the Statue of Liberty, it's pretty much on an island, so you have to take a boat to the Statue of Liberty. So, Greg, you took a boat to the Statue of Liberty all the way there. It's not that long, but you went there, and then you got off, and the Statue of Liberty wasn't open, and you couldn't go inside?
They wouldn't let you in that day.
Then why go?
Well, you know, first of all, a lot of guys will take a boat just to get to her, you know, or her. And
Wait, what?
Well, you know, you'll go out of your way to you know, take a boat or meet a girl. But the day I was there, they weren't letting you inside.
Why not question this and why go all the way there if you're not even allowed to go in? Why not just look from afar and then go do something else?
They didn't tell us we weren't allowed in. She wasn't letting anyone in that day.
All right. What is it?
Did you go inside?
Yes, I
did. Don't say yes.
I did. I just feel like I'm setting him up. And look at him. Look at the way he's looking. Your neck is going to, like, break. He's looking up, and his neck is sideways. I've never seen anything like it. This is a grown man who cannot figure it out.
I know.
You're leaning on the side. Your hair is falling. His hair is literally, he's got long hair, is flowing on one side because he's looking up so much. He looks like he's stretching, and then he's got the mama bird thing. And we keep telling him, all you have to do is like stand up or try to make it normal, but you keep doing it. It's the weirdest thing to look at. Am I right, Maddie?
It is weird.
We're looking at a man that looks like he's, I don't know, like you look like you're in a yoga class. It looks wild.
Or he hurt his neck.
Hurt his neck?
Did you hurt your neck?
No. I need to take yoga, though.
Why?
I need to get more flexible.
What?
I just need to be more flexible.
Why?
Because I can't get in those positions.
What positions?
Yoga positions.
Well, some are not as straining.
Have you done yoga?
Every day.
Really?
I do yoga every morning and every evening before bed.
So, Greg, I heard that you used to do some plays.
Yes.
And you would do Marlon Brando's A Streetcar.
Is this true?
Named Desire.
Is that true?
Is this true?
Yes, Tennessee Williams.
Wow.
Okay. Well, let's hear some of your stuff.
Before he gives us stuff, I just have a few questions. First of all, where was your production held?
At UCLA.
Did you go to UCLA?
Yes.
You did?
You did not.
Yes, I did. When I was a serious actor for a while, I would audition 5 times a day.
5 times a day at UCLA?
No. Warner Brothers, you name it, Paramount, and I couldn't even read in those days.
So why? How long were you doing 5 times a day?
Every single day.
For how long?
Probably a few years.
So you auditioned 5 times a day, every
yes.
single day for a few years.
I'm not making it up.
Yes, you are.
No, it's a true
story.
That
is statistically not accurate.
No, it is. You can ask my old manager.
Okay, so I'm going to talk to your old manager and say, did Greg go in Saturday and Sunday or on Christmas Day and do 5 auditions on Christmas Day? You did that.
Yeah, well, Christmas Day, maybe not Christmas Day.
Saturday and Sunday?
If he could get me in there, he got me on every lot, even Disney.
What did you wear, Greg?
For your auditions.
That was where I ran into problems. I didn't know what to wear to a lot of them, you know?
You just wore your cop
outfit.
But
what kind of things would you wear?
You just dressed like a cop every audition.
Well, I tell you one thing. For Baywatch, I just went in what they told me to wear.
What'd they tell you to wear?
Well, you know, I just showed up in it, like in character.
Well, what did they tell you?
In a bathing suit?
Yeah, just in a bathing suit. I just showed up because it was in character.
Thank you so much for not saying bathing suit. That was very provocative, and that was cool.
Can you not say bathing suit?
I cannot say provocative or bathing suit because Greg is not telling us the truth right now.
Like, well, let's hear some of your monologue.
Well,
let's hear some
of it. That great monologue from UCLA, very prestigious.
Very prestigious.
This is a very good acting school. Greg got the lead role. Is that what we're saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. The lead role of a Tennessee Williams play, Streetcar Named Desire. And this is his rendition and what got him the part. So let's hear what we got here.
Have you ever heard of the Napoleonic Code?
Are you asking a question?
We don't know the other part, so you.
Oh, wow. Okay, I'll do the monologue. I thought you guys were going to play.
I've never done it. You have to do it. You're
once,
the star.
Once again, here's Greg Buckman as Marlon Brando in A Streetcar Named Desire.
Lead head production from UCLA, where Greg went to school, apparently.
Let's hear it.
Have you ever heard of the Napoleonic Code? Well, let me enlighten you on a point or two. The Napoleonic Code in the state of Louisiana, what belongs to me, or you, belongs to me also. I'm trying to remember it all. Well, what is your sister, some sort of deep-sea diver?
Hey, can you get into it a little bit more? Because I feel like you're Greg still.
Yeah, and at
can you get into it a little
he
more?
He had a country accent.
Well, yeah, but what country?
Well, he was from the South, and they told me not to do the accent, let the accent come natural.
Okay. I also want to do a couple critiques. One, I don't think in the Tennessee Williams play they had the baby bird looking up in the microphone thing for the side. But let's forget that. I don't know if Wow was in that. Was Wow in the play? I don't remember. I don't think it was. So, okay, let's go ahead. And this is Greg Buckman.
Take two.
Lead production at UCLA campus. This was a prestigious play, and he got this role. Let's hear his monologue.
Wow. It's got to come back to me.
Just start from the top.
Yeah.
And okay. Maybe.
Action.
I'm going to give you a little hint. Take out the Wow, because I don't think it was there.
Okay. I've had more chances than I can count on my fingers. And I've made the grade, too. Oh, wait. That's the other Tennessee Williams play. That's Sweeper to Youth. Okay, wait. Let me remember how it goes.
Did you say this part on stage?
Napoleonic Coke. Well, let me enlighten you on a point or two. Your sister has pearls, ropes, and chains, and jewelry in her box. What is she, some sort of deep-sea diver? Have you ever heard of the Napoleonic Code? In the state of Louisiana, what belongs to you belongs to me also. So when your sister is done soaking in the hot tub, ask her if she's some sort of deep-sea diver.
Is that the...
That was it?
Yes.
Wow.
I was trying to remember it.
Thank you so much.
How did
thank
I do? You.
Okay. First of all, I really liked it. Still don't believe that you were the lead at a UCLA project, because I don't think you went to UCLA like you said. Did you graduate from UCLA?
No, I didn't. My manager at the time paid for all my acting classes. He was very believed in me, very, very much.
Yeah, and he did in 5 times a day for 2 or 3 years.
Every day. That's what good I for got you. Worried. It was so stressful, and I feel that I would have stayed with it. I didn't understand the business. He could get me on any lot. He put me in the Kathy Ireland modeling.
Okay.
So he put me on every lot every day, and I was working very, very hard. I felt like I wasn't prepared yet. I should look up this monologue for Tennessee Williams. Where's my phone? And then it'll all come back to me. Oh, whoops. Siri said, may I help you? But anyway, I was going out every single day and stuff like that. Did you guys ever do any Tennessee Williams stuff? My friend Gore Vidal knew Tennessee Williams. You guys didn't do any Tennessee Williams plays? Did you do the one Death of a Salesman? Did you guys do Death of a Salesman? No? Did you guys do Bus Stop? No. I'm trying to think of all the classics. I did some hard roles at UCLA, like really difficult.
Greg, there's a rapper in there or something?
Where? Oh, no. He's eating his taco.
Is he eating his taco with the rapper on it? Is that what's happening?
I'm not sure.
What's going on in there? I told you, it's so good that it
was... And our sound engineer's here eating the tacos.
Oh, my God. What is happening to us all? Maddie, let's check in with you.
Sure.
You know, I just wanted to say let's check into somebody. So Greg knows that the conversation's over.
Oh, you're keeping it going. Okay.
Well, I think it's a good cut off because he would have continued to talk. We didn't even speak for a while there, and he was going on and on. How are you, though?
Good. How are you?
What if the show was just called How Are You, and we just kept asking each other how you're doing? Like, how are you? How are you? What's going on with you? You all right?
We should call it that.
He's chewing like a cow with his taco. Just FYI, everybody. All right, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'm hungry. My tacos didn't come.
You could have eaten at 1. You could eat at 4.
I saved you tacos.
I appreciate it.
You're mad.
I'm not mad, no. I think people think I get mad quite a bit.
I can see that.
I think
that.
It's my sense of humor. Which is a terrible thing, to have a sense of humor. People think you hate them. What kind of sense of humor is that? See, this is why I need to get back into therapy. And one that doesn't fall asleep, you know, somebody that can really engage with me. That would be nice.
So this past weekend, we always go to this liquor store. I went with my wife. She wanted to buy a kombucha.
With liquor in it?
No. No liquor. No.
Why don't you get your kombucha at a non-liquor
store? I don't
store?
Know, but there's this creepy old guy that's always there. Every time we go in there, he like takes off his glasses slowly and just kind of stares down Lauren. She's like, "You're so beautiful. You're so beautiful." And then being like, "You're a lucky guy. You're a lucky guy." Just like super creepy.
Right.
And this past weekend I went, the guy said to Lauren, like, or said to me and Lauren, she's like, "You're so lucky." And I was like, "Oh, what's that? What's that? You being creepy?"
You said this.
Yeah.
To him. Yeah.
And he was like shocked. That
she
I said
was
that.
Or he was?
He was.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I think Lauren was like, "No, no, don't do that."
She liked it.
No.
She's like, "He's a gentleman."
So no, she was just like, don't do that. And I was like, the guy is like an old creep. He's like a 70-year-old creep, like
right.
creeping at ladies. And I just wanted to teach him. You can't do that.
Right, right.
You know?
Don't be so hard on yourself. Your instinct was right. I mean,
okay.
You weren't reading into that. This guy
no.
was, like, taking his glasses off slowly and looking her up and down. That's the first thing. Number two, plenty of places on Earth to get kombucha. Never walk, step foot in that.
Yeah, I don't know why
again.
She goes there.
Does she enjoy the banter?
I don't know.
Does she think
no,
it's funny?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No.
Well, then don't go there to this liquor store anymore.
Yeah.
You don't need crappy liquor store kombucha from a 70-year-old pervert.
Let's ask Greg. Greg, do you, if someone's creepy with your wife, would you say something? What? Why aren't you talking?
I can't hear you guys.
You just answered two questions in a row.
All of a sudden, your lips just moved, but I couldn't hear you guys.
Can you hear us now?
Yes, now I can hear
okay.
you.
Okay.
Okay. Well, either way, I think you got the gist of what he was saying.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
And I got really, really, really upset.
What happened? What was the situation?
He just said, "Wow, nice this, nice that. Wow, there's enough
he
there for all of us."
He didn't
and
say that.
And I got
that.
Upset.
There
him.
Was a man that
what did you
out?
Say to him?
Her feelings.
What did you say to him?
I just started yelling at him and everything.
But
and
what did you say? Like, what did you say? Like, stop or what?
Yeah,
what
I told him stop. I said, you know.
He said there's enough there for all of us?
Yes.
Who is this man?
Our apartment manager.
Oh, my God. What a jack off. Or is that a term?
That's.
Jerk.
Well, yeah.
Jerk
and
off.
I feel like, was it like an old man? Like, how old was he?
He was older. Yes.
I mean, old men really have to get the...
I wonder if they think they can take the liberty because they look defensive or defenseless.
Other girls were complaining, too, like he was just going into their apartment, you know?
Oh, my
pretending
God.
They're not
oh God.
Home.
Pretending they're not home.
Yeah.
They were there?
Yes.
So he wanted to get a glimpse.
Right.
Oh, my God. Well, this
oh
guy clearly has issues.
What's going on with you? What's up with you?
I just went to Compton last week, and I drove by Eazy-E's childhood home, Dr. Dre's childhood home.
Our guest today was in Straight Outta Compton.
And I would yeah. love to talk to him about that. Compton is such a famous place in pop culture. Then when you go there, there's really nothing going on. I never got scared. I went to a drive-through Starbucks and got a drink and enjoyed that.
That you spilled?
No, that wasn't today.
Okay.
But, yeah, I went to CVS and got some water. There's a lot of normal things. Deposited a check at a Wells Fargo there in Compton. I actually went to the DMV in Compton, too. Got my license renewed and everything.
Wow.
Compton really treated me right. So, yeah, New York, Compton. I like it. And everything's hip-hop lately with me. Everything hip-hop.
You love the hip-hop.
I love it. When I was in New York, I went to Adam Yauch Park. Adam Yauch was in the Beastie Boys, and there's a park dedicated to him in Brooklyn. I spent the afternoon there with my son. And
oh, I just wanted to tell
I can
you.
Hear you breathing.
I'm going to go back to college. Oh, yeah, I know.
You're going back to college?
No, no. I spent the night in Compton jail one time.
Oh, tell
Why?
Us that story.
Well, the police pulled me over.
In Compton?
No, but the ticket was from Compton.
So they
because I used to work in Compton.
Where did you work in Compton?
I worked for the railroad.
Oh, wow. Were you, like, pounding on it and, like, building it?
Trying to operate cranes, driving trucks.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a long story. But
so you were okay, pulled
we're
over.
Okay, we got to stop because this has been Wait. A really long intro.
It could be, but I can't stop right now that Greg was in Compton jail.
Yes.
We can cut it down if we need to. Tell us about Compton jail. But I mean, this is interesting.
But real quick, Greg.
Okay, really, really quick. They said, "You have a warrant for your arrest."
Wow.
And I said, "No, I don't." And they said, "Yes, you do." And it was a traffic ticket they said I didn't pay.
Wow.
So I spent the night in Hollywood jail. Then they took me to Compton jail. And I kept saying, I paid the ticket. And it turned out they never took it off the computer. My mom ran into my apartment with the return check.
And then what happened?
Then they're all, well, sorry. You know, I had to face the judge.
Sorry?
Yes.
They gave you 2 nights in jail and they just gave you, they were our bad?
A whole weekend.
A whole weekend?
Yes.
All right, well, compare the two, Hollywood and Compton jail.
Hollywood was funny.
Okay, it was like kind of a funny little, like a comedy club, like kind of light and funny.
Yeah.
A lot of good people and, you know, just kind of like fun. It was fun.
Yeah, well, in those days, I was a lot younger. Hollywood was a lot like...
It was very light. It was like jail light.
It was like the movie Taxi Driver. A lot of hookers, a lot of
pimps.
They
have carpet.
A lot of hookers and a lot of pimps. I don't find that very funny. That's interesting that you found it so funny. What happened?
What?
A lot of hookers, a lot of pimps. What was so fun about this jail?
Because those guys were coming in all night with their fur coats on and big hats on and saying, I have the money, I'll get a lawyer, I'm going to bail myself out. And then he goes, I'm not even a pimp. And the guy had the whole fur coat on and fur hat on.
Yeah,
and,
you would think, you know, in my opinion, before you go in, just take off the jacket and the hat, put it in the car. You don't need all that, right?
Right, right.
So that was more like a comedy jail.
Yeah, I loved it, actually.
Oh, my God.
Because, you know, I mean, I kept telling them I did pay my ticket. They go, explain it to the judge. Explain it to the judge. Next thing you know, I'm cuffed to like 20 guys on my way to Compton jail. You don't ever want to get busted on a Friday night because court's on Monday.
Okay, so on the car ride, is there any conversation, small talk with the 20 of you? You're just sitting in the back?
Well, you're just chained to everybody.
Do you say anything? Is there small
talk? I
tried
to.
What were some of the topics?
How are you? What'd you do?
You went like hardcore criminal. What are you in for?
Yes.
You did? And
yes.
Did they answer? Or?
One guy wouldn't talk to me. I don't know what was wrong with him. And he hated
He's
me
going
the whole
to
time in
He's in
jail.
Jail. There's probably
He tried to hit me.
Mine.
He tried to hit you.
And then they chained us together.
Great. How did you try to win him over?
I started talking to him.
What did you say?
I said, well, what'd you do?
He just ignored you?
Yes, he would not talk to me the whole way there.
And then did you keep on trying to, like, engage with him?
Yeah, I turned around and I was talking to everybody. Everybody was so serious.
It's jail, and they're on their way from Hollywood jail to Compton jail, so they were in funny jail, and now they're going to Compton jail. It's a serious situation. I have never been in the back of a paddy wagon with 20 people on the way to Compton. What was it like?
They feed you breakfast.
What was the breakfast?
It was like dried oatmeal and cold coffee. And let me tell you something. I was being all polite. It's not, can you pass the milk? It's, can you pass the M milk? MF. So
okay.
I was like, please excuse me, can you pass the milk?
I thought he was like, can you flat pass the M milk? Like,
and it's
M starts
down.
With It's
mother F juice down. It's not, excuse me, can you pass the Kool-Aid?
I know that part is a joke.
No, it's not a joke.
There's no question that's a joke. You don't have to say mother F.
No, that no. I'm just saying it's not, can you please pass the juice?
Either way, so you're going from the paddy wagon. You finally arrive at Compton. What happens? You get out. All 20 of you get out. What then are you wearing? What are you wearing?
I was just wearing what I got arrested in.
So was there some people in
pants? So shorts.
Yeah.
I actually was in shorts.
Short
shorts? Yes. Yeah.
I had sandals?
I had my bathing suit on, just like a
sandals?
Cut open t-shirt.
Cut open?
Or a
like
shirt
a midriff?
Was open with like buttons and stuff.
You know what? I would have wanted to hit you, I think.
Well, I think they, okay, this is the truth. I think that he thought I was a male prostitute, the cop, because he pulled me over on Santa Monica Boulevard, but I was just going home.
Did he wink?
No.
All right.
The cop pulled me over.
Okay, but enough of this cop, because you and these cops can flirt all day, but I want to know more or less about...
they had guns on me.
Well, sure they did. I'm sure they did.
Okay.
They thought you were a ball of fun. They wanted to bring you to the fun Hollywood prison. But so you're walking in Compton.
They snore in that jail. You can't sleep.
So from there, you have breakfast, dry cereal, M milk, and then you are there and somebody tries to punch you.
Yeah, because he wanted the top bunk.
Do people play cards? Are you guys just sitting, twiddling your thumbs? What happens?
Well, it was like 100 guys in one cell.
All right, that's insane.
And I couldn't get any sleep. You know, people just snore all night and talk all night, and people come in all night. But I didn't do it. I didn't do anything wrong.
I'm
and they strip search you.
I'm curious about you trying to sleep, too. I think that's hilarious.
Yeah, I did try to sleep. I was tired.
Did you ask for a blanket? Covering up in jail makes me laugh. Putting a blanket up and trying to get warm and cozy. Do you have a cot? How do you sleep? On a bench?
There were bunk beds, and some guys slept on the floor. Yeah. You know, there was no more room left.
Aren't you afraid?
And you got a bunk bed?
Yeah, and then somebody took my shoes.
Of course they did. Did you say tops when you went to the bunk bed?
Of course you say top. You're in jail.
Did you go on top then?
Yeah, I was on top.
And then while you were sleeping, somebody stole your shoes.
Yes. But here's what happened. I go, my shoes. Where are my shoes? Where are my shoes? He goes, I took them off because you were asleep. They're right here.
Thank you so much, Greg. Anyway, so we're going to go ahead and get to our guests. Very excited about this man coming in. I'm going to read an intro. I'm going to just go ahead with an intro
okay.
before he gets here.
Okay.
And then we'll just jump into it.
All right.
Ready?
Well, maybe when he's here.
Yeah, maybe he can hear
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll cut. Let's cut.
Okay. Maddie and Anthony's
World, they're great. It's great. All right, cool. So are we rolling, Jason? We're rolling.
Well, where did that beep come
from? I don't
from?
Know. I like
did you
this
just get
beep.
That?
That's really professional.
Yeah, it is. Pretty
standard. Just
like
in
that.
General, we haven't heard it yet.
We're excited.
We're recording uh-huh. right now. We won't mention this. But remember, a beep is important in podcasts.
Okay, great.
No, I'm going to read
my
this.
My first lesson.
I'm going to read this. I think it's a little blurb. I'm going to try to do an intro, which is very
okay.
cool.
Here we go.
And a one. I might have to do this a couple times because I
That's
haven't
fine.
Done one of these. And I like reading, but I don't remember everything I read. All right, you can do this. The good folks at Maddie and Anthony's World would like to welcome a gentleman who was... All right, let's start over. The good folks at Maddie and Anthony's World would like to welcome a gentleman who has acted in over 20 films and television projects. His producing credits include 3 feature films, a television pilot, short films, commercials, and a countless music videos. I can delete that out. He's worked with a different... All right.
Just take some breaths.
I don't breathe.
Breathe. Take breaths. That's what you need to
okay,
do.
I'm going to breathe.
So,
oh,
here we go.
Tell him this. Sorry. I'm going to add something. TV show pilots say 2 seasons of a TV show, because that turned into 2 seasons. So then they'll know that we made a TV show.
Oh.
I am the director here, not you.
Dang it. Already screwed it up.
All right.
I want all
this. If I don't do this... The good folks at Maddie and Anthony's World would like to welcome a gentleman who has acted in over 20 films and television projects.
Products.
His producing credits include 3 feature films, a television show, short films, commercials, and countless music videos. He's worked with a diverse list of directors such as Clint Eastwood, Joel and Ethan Coen, F. Gary Gray.
Maybe we should have Travis read it.
I would like to. And Harmony, how do you say Harmony's last name again? Carone.
Carone's good.
Harmony Corona. Please give a warm round of applause to the man, the myth, the legend, Travis Nicholson. That was actually good.
From a scale of intros from 1 to 10, how was that?
Scale of 1 to 10? Is 11.3 an option?
Thank you so much.
Yes.
I messed up a lot of things, and I appreciate the positivity coming from you, Travis Nicholson, who is here to grace us, and I failed you.
Our intros miserably. Are an hour long, just
mm-hmm.
so you
oh,
know.
That's good.
I did cocaine before you got here. I'm really hyped up, so.
So did I.
So how's it going, man?
Good, man. Good to see you.
Been a minute.
Yeah. The traffic in L.A., believe it or not, was bad today.
Mm.
Haven't heard that one.
it leaves something to be desired as
yeah.
far as traffic
it's,
goes.
It's tough. And you're from the South.
I am.
But you were a child when you lived there,
no,
right?
I moved to Nashville when I was 2. And
okay.
My parents followed soon after, which was good because I did not know what I was doing there.
I'm asking you here right now, right here.
Mm-hmm.
Travis, tell me a little bit about the traffic there in Nashville.
You know what? Nashville is like a broken wagon wheel. It's like a wagon wheel with broken spokes. It's like a bunch of intersecting interstates that go around the city, and then all the streets change names all the time. So you're like, you go down Demumbrian, but that becomes, oh gosh, I don't even know what Demumbrian becomes anymore. I know 8th Avenue becomes Franklin Road and so on and so on. And
they change just on you. That's
yeah.
so wild. Is that because there's so many country western stars that have lived
yeah.
there that they have to name after every one of them?
Mm-hmm. George Strait Boulevard is very curvy after all.
Is that true?
That's not true. I made that up.
There's I notice when you talk about the South, your accent kind of comes out.
Well, I can't help that. Well, you know, it's funny. If I get on the phone with somebody from back home, I've had girlfriends stare at me and go, "What was that?" And I'm like, "What are you talking about, ma'am?"
Yeah, yeah.
Talking to my friend back home.
That's hilarious.
The drawl comes out.
How about when you get angry? Does that come out when you're like, "Damn it!" You know.
I've never been angry, so I don't know.
Well, you have a little bit of an accent too, Anthony. Minnesota. This is a show about.
I sound
accents.
Like I'm from Minnesota when I get real angry.
Yeah, that.
I'll tell you what.
When you do get angry, Anthony, you do sound kind of like a Minnesotan. When
You betcha I'm angry.
Is this kind of a mockery don't of you my know? People? I don't know what's happening.
Don't you know?
I'm very offended at this. Can you give us a little sample conversation that we may or may not be able to understand?
Here's the thing. If you're out there in Eastern Kentucky, you come out down through the mountains, then if you're a moonshiner, you know which way to go. But you figure out which way. Okay, it's going to split down Fork Road. So you're going to take a left down there. And you people talk like real fast like this from East Tennessee. But then people.
Holy
also,
Lord.
And also like a draw, like somebody be like, "No, I'm not going to get down there. That's not the deal." Thing is, you want to get soda pop, you can go head down there. There's a Kmart down there, there's Pizza Hut, whatever the complaints you need down there.
I love
that's really good.
I love the idea of a real manly man talking about soda pop, which is like this guy you would think would be talking about guns and whiskey. You want a good soda pop?
Well, I probably did that injustice because really everything's Coke.
I've heard that.
What kind of Coke you want?
Sprite,
yeah.
I love it.
Funny.
Did you get one word out of the first Tennessee, Maddie?
No, not really.
I think you said moonshine. Did you say that?
Yeah,
you did say
moonshine.
All right,
I got
moonshine. Awesome.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to ask you something that's pretty cool. Your dad is a Grammy-winning producer.
Yeah, and songwriter. Yeah.
And songwriter. That's amazing.
Whoa.
Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Garth
Your
Brooks.
Dad's wedded Willie Nelson?
All of these.
Yes.
He's got a really long
Spoiler
name.
Spoiler alert, yeah.
It is Gary Nicholson.
Yeah.
He sounds like an amazing human being.
He is. He also has a, spoiler alert, alter ego called Whitey Johnson. That
wow.
guy just plays blues music, and if I go see Whitey play... Whitey will not really acknowledge that I'm his boy.
Oh, my God. But
he'll look at me and he'll go, "Hey, kid, get yourself something on my tab. Tell your mother hi for me." Like,
wow.
As though he and my mom are friends, but, you know, one of those kind of deals.
That's wild.
It's pretty hilarious.
When does he turn off the character? When is Whitey gone?
He never goes away.
Whitey? So, is this man actually your father?
It's hard to know sometimes. My dad... lately, the craziest thing is he's been writing with Ringo Starr. So,
oh, my God.
What?
So, like, his phone will ring. He used to never answer his phone if it was an unlisted call, but now he'll answer it because he's hoping it's Ringo. And sure enough, one time we were in the car, and the phone rang, he answered it, and it was Ringo, and he put it on speakerphone, and he was like, "Hey, Gary, how you doing? It's Ringo." We're like, "Oh, my God."
That's insane.
Me and my mom were in the car just, like, geeking out about it. My dad was like, "Well, hey, I'm going to be in Los Angeles on, you know, April 23rd or whatever," and he's like, "We'll all be waiting for you, Gary."
Wow.
He fucks my dad. He messes
Oh, my God. That's great.
He always says stuff like that, like antagonizing my dad. Like, "We'll all be waiting with bated breath, Gary. We're all waiting
that's
for you."
That's a really good impression,
that is.
By the way.
You are a man of many voices.
When we were younger, we were doing our Liverpool license with this bartender, and we were like, you know, we're going to trick her, you know? So me and my buddy Corey Yonth were like going, "We're from Liverpool. We're just here.
We're playing
a gig." She believed it. She totally bought it, hook, line, and sinker. You know, we were like 22 years old, and we thought we were really cool. And then this big group of guys comes in down the other end of the bar, this hulking, like, soccer team, and she goes, "Oh, my God, you're going to love these guys. They're from Liverpool."
Oh, boy.
Oh, my God.
And they're all really tough.
Oh, my God. And she, like, walks down there, she's talking to them, they're kind of looking over at us and stuff, and we're like, all of a sudden, we're real quiet, you know, we're like, "We'll just get a check, please." And she comes back, and this guy's like, "You're from Liverpool?" And we're like, "Yeah, that's right, we're from right around there." And then this guy goes, "You don't sound like you're from Liverpool. You sound like you're from Essex," which is like it's a very posh, totally not Liverpudlian sounding place.
And we Liverpudlian. I love that.
Liverpudlian. We just hauled ass out of there.
"You got me. I'm from Essex." Yes,
yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. That's right. We're from Essex. Bye-bye now. Cheerio.
When you were a kid and your dad was working with people, did you ever have like celebrities running around your house?
When I was a kid, my favorite rock and roll guy was Tom Petty.
Yeah, he's the best.
You know, Tom Petty never came over, but everybody's band did.
And oh, my God.
Benmont Tinch, his piano player, is the coolest guy in the world. He's a close family friend of ours. I had posters of all these guys on my wall, like Mike Campbell and stuff. And I'd come home in high school, and then Campbell would be in my dad's, like, garage studio, like,
that's incredible.
Checking out guitars. And I'd just be like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
You know, that's incredible.
It was crazy, yeah.
Did you think your dad was cool, or were you like, this guy's lame still, even though he is working with all these people?
When I was like a teenager, it was like country music wasn't cool, you know? Like,
sure.
That's not cool. Rock and roll is cool, and like other stuff's cool, but now I love all that stuff. I love like even the sappy country music from the 90s and stuff. I love it. I listen
you love
to all
it.
Of it. Yeah.
You did music. Were you in a country band?
Like, yeah, I was in a band called The Swindlers. It was all kids of country music people, like Steve Earle's kid, Justin Townes Earle was in the band, and then this guy, Kevin Welch, his son, Dustin Welch, was in the band. And Wally Wilson is a producer in Nashville. His son, Skylar Wilson, was in the band. And we were all kids of people that wrote songs or produced music, and we had this band. We swindled old songs and remade them, so we called ourselves The Swindlers. And
I like that.
That's a good name.
Justin Townes Earle is still making records and playing. He's doing well. And Skylar's producing a bunch of great records, and Dustin's in Austin playing all the time. They're all have careers in music. Corey Yontz was in the band. He plays with Jack White and Old Crow Medicine Show. And
oh my God!
Wow.
Meanwhile, I'm out here in Trash Humpers.
You're doing some fun stuff, no, though.
I am.
You were doing some fun stuff. He mentioned Trash Humpers.
He did.
Let's just jump into
it. Let's jump into that movie. So tell us what it's about and how that came about.
I'm going to do another bad accent, because what happened was I was in North Carolina working on a movie with my buddy Shane Taylor, and it was this cool southern gothic movie with Chris Christopherson. I got a phone call randomly, and it's this French guy. He was like, hello, this is Charles Merrington Twins, calling for Travis Nicholson or Tres Humpies. And I was like, what? He's like, I'm working with Harmony Korine on this movie. I thought it was somebody messing with me, you know, and I was like, I've never heard any of my friends do a French accent very good.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was very thick French accent, much different than what I'm sounding like right now, but I'm trying. And he was like, can you come to Nashville and meet with Harmony Korine about the Tres Humpies? And I was like, what? He's like, Tres Humpies. I was like, I don't know what you're saying, but I do want to talk to him. So apparently Harmony had seen a commercial I'd acted in on an editor's reel, and I knew him because he went to my high school. I knew his little brother, too, and, like, he graduated before I went to Hillsborough. We all knew who Harmony was, though, because he went to our high school, and he'd gone on to make Kids and stuff. And
yeah.
So I flew to Nashville over the weekend, and I'm walking from my parents' house. It's, like, 3 blocks away, somehow, their office they'd set up there. So I'm walking, and it starts raining. I'm like, great, this is great, pouring down rain. And then Harmony pulls by in his car, and he sees me. He's like, Travis? And I'm like, yeah. And I hop in with him, and we go to the office, and he shows me this weird brick of, like, fax paper. And it has all these images of his assistant, where he's had his assistant go and, like, put on an old man mask and, like, squat over people's air ducts and look scary in alleys and grabbing trash cans and stuff. This dialogue running through it that kind of was what this story kind of was loosely, almost like poems. And it was weird. He was like, so what do you think? You want to do it? And I was like, yeah. Guy shook his hand. I was like, I don't know what I'm getting into. And I certainly did not know what I was signing up for, but I knew I wanted to work with him, and I always admired him. And that's how it all started, I guess.
And how long did you work on that movie?
We shot for 14 days. He had all these sort of vignettes written out. He knew kind of what we wanted to do. A lot of improv, and he kind of let us loose on these sets and let us formulate the scenes, kind of guide us through it. You know, he played one of the characters.
Let's talk about the characters. So you, probably around 35.
Sure, yeah.
Around that, and you were dressed as an elderly person.
Yeah.
80 years old.
Probably.
How long did that take?
They would do like my arms and hands separately, but the head was a pre-made mold prosthetic that I could kind of climb into. Like I had to put my arms into it and pull it over my head like this, and then it would just kind of flap to my head. It would curl over my lips, and then it would fit right around my eyes.
It's pretty crazy.
Sometimes we put a little bit of glue in there to kind of make sure that my cheek muscles would move the mask.
Yeah.
You'd articulate your face, and then you'd look in the mirror, and it would make a different expression than what you were used to. So you kind of felt like you're a puppeteering. Really bizarre. And you know, like if you see an old person and they're just kind of like scary looking, like you don't keep looking at them. You put them in your peripheral vision. That would happen in public a lot. People would see me and they'd think, oh, it's just an old guy. I'm going to like not stare at him. You kind of get away with walking like really slow in front of a car so they couldn't get by. Or like people kind of like would just believe it. One of the other guys that was in it too, he'd act slow for a while. And then Brian Kotzer is his name. And he would just all of a sudden just jump up and run off, you know?
Right.
Just people go, what the heck?
That old man can really run.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was curious about that. Did you have filming locations that you had to like?
You know, we kind of steal an alley here or there. And like, you'd be like, all right, Trav, you hump that trash can. Brian, you head over there. And then you're going to get that other big dumpster over there. You hit that one and be like, okay. And I was always sort of more sentimental, I think. I had smell the trash can, make sure it was the one I wanted.
Sure.
Maybe say a couple nice things to it first, but
right.
Brian just went in for the kill every time.
Yeah, he was the maniac.
Yeah.
Amongst the maniacs.
Yeah. He probably got more chicks as far as garbage is concerned.
So what would you describe trash humpers as being about?
Old people that are almost, they've been alive for a long time. They're almost immortal, and they kind of live off the refuse of society, and they're kind of a commentary on what we discard and our humanity, and they're sort of romancing all that and humping it.
Sure.
This is the most intellectual possible way I think I can describe this movie, but there was this concept that we'd been around for a long time, like maybe thousands of years, and we were like just in this particular era, and we were like seeking out the things that kept our life alive, but we were also really old. We weren't like of this decade necessarily. You know?
Right, right.
It was funny that you said intellectually, right? That's the word?
Yeah.
No, I really did feel like this movie, out of a lot of movies I've seen in the past, really made you kind of, it was almost like a book. You try to picture what's happening on your own. Have you experienced that with a lot of different people? Like, this is what it means, and then somebody else says, this is what it means. A lot of thought-provoking, and maybe it doesn't mean anything.
Oh, know? Yeah. When we premiered the movie, it was at Toronto International Film Festival, and it was sold-out screening, and it was a big part of that screening was distributors. So, like, these people were there trying to figure out how to sell trash humpers, yeah. You know? And, sure. You know, 25 people walked out of that screening, you know? They're like,
wow, I heard.
I don't know how to market this movie, you know? Like, that's ridiculous. And then we played it in New York Film Festival, and it was, like, sold out, reverent silence. This is a piece of art, and we're just really taking it in. And they presented Harmony, I think, with an award, and we dressed in our prosthetics and walked out and kind of stumbled through the audience, And then in Nashville, we premiered it, uproarious laughter the whole time, you know.
So just, all three viewings had a different reaction.
Yeah, all the ones I was at had very different reactions.
And even watching it. So when I first watched it, I was just like kind of into it and trying to figure out on my own what I thought these characters were. And one kind of reminded me of, if you've ever seen the movie Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, yeah.
I kind of felt like it seemed like the members of Texas Chainsaw Massacre broke free from Texas and they were just running amok and having fun on vacation. That was like, oh.
That's a really good description. I've never heard, that's an awesome way of describing it.
Well, it kind of reminded me of that because they're just all like real, you know, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, they're all murderers. But they do remind me of the characters you guys played because they're all kind of having fun, and a lot of them that don't really understand that they're murderers, they're just kind of raised into this world. And then my other thought then was I had a few. I thought maybe they were youthful people with masks on, kind of running around, running amok, didn't want to be seen. So then I thought maybe there was somebody that was like, you know, like a business person, like hiding. And then the last one was
That's good.
I think there was another one where I thought that it was old people that were always this. They always live this life. And there was a scene where there's a little kid shooting hoops and he keeps missing. And every time he missed, the three old people there just laughed every time. They thought it was funny every time. They're just mocking a child.
Yeah, they're mocking a toddler.
And he shoots and then, huh, and they have this weird laugh. It just seemed like there were elderly people that remained the same. So I think I read into this movie way too much, maybe. You know what I mean?
There's a sense that it is a home movies, a family. Me and Brian were kind of like the kids, and then Harmony and Rachel were sort of the parents, you know?
Sure.
That was sort of the vibe. And then I love the idea of it being the cast of Chainsaw.
I did too. I was like, that's really fun. Like, they probably can take a vacation and they're just causing a muck, and that's what they would do. They would hump trash cans and then thing.
They would break a lot of stuff too.
Yeah.
Right?
And I do see what you're saying about those two being the parents, because there was a time where the two of you were humping trash cans And I guess Mama, I think that is she, what we'll call her Mama, yeah. She was sitting there in the alley watching you guys, and then eventually she fell asleep. And that's, thought that was funny because it was just like, yeah, that's what they do all day. They just hump trash cans. It's not shocking. It's just like she was bored of it. It's just part of life. Again, I really watched the movie. Maybe I looked in, maybe I should have just enjoyed it and not thought too much, but I thought it was kind of, thought it was really cool.
I really think it's funny. It is. That's how I feel about it. I think that there's a certain sort of sarcastic sense of humor about the whole thing that I really think is funny.
Did you get in trouble filming it anywhere?
Oh my
God. On a sidewalk.
Oh yeah. There was a part where we were in this alley and we're, you know, humping this man's trash cans, and he didn't know what was going on. So, you know, he turned on the lights and he started yelling at us and going, "What are you doing?" And then he realized we were like shooting something, and then that was all I needed to be like, "Oh no, go ahead, man. You can hump that can. Y'all go ahead and hump that can all you want." We're like, "Thank you very much, sir." You know, just in character.
He just allowed it.
He just was like, "Oh, I didn't realize you were shooting a movie. Continue humping those trash cans, old people."
That's great.
Yeah. So we.
Isn't it weird what you can get away with? Probably in other places. L.A. has a thing where, like,
yeah,
they're going to be like, "Yeah, my trash can might be in a movie. What the hell? Why not?" Yeah,
exactly.
Did Harmony ever say, like, why it was a trash? I mean, why a trash can? Like, out of all things. Why was it a trash can?
There's a sort of this monologue, which is one of the only times I got to hold the camera and shoot, was he was kind of like talking about, you know, these people think that, you know, the whole world is just a bunch of, you know, fancy lives and they don't understand. I can't remember how it went, but he was talking about, like, you know, we're the ones that, you know, live this life. We live in the gutters and we live, you know, and he's talking about like how he was philosophizing about why, you know, we want the dregs of the refuse of this society, and we want to embrace that. That's what we're about, kind of thing.
Right, we are garbage. We're gonna have sex with it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, man. And there's this time when we were in this bar. It was like these day drunks. You know, it was like, I don't know, noon or something. And we're in this bar, and there's this old man in there, and it's kind of dark in there. And we're kind of waiting to figure out what we're going to do. We're going to, like, maybe shoot something in the back of this place. And so I sat down next to this old guy, and he just started talking to me. And he just thought I was an old man, you know? And it was really, I felt bad for a minute because I was like, oh, man, this guy thinks I'm an old man too. But then I was like, well, he's having a good time talking to me, and why not just let him say what he wants to say? So he tells me this whole story about how he used to jump trains. He used to be a hobo.
Whoa.
He was like, "Man, you know, when you jump on a train, you know, what you want to do is grab on the whole side of it and you swing up on in there. You know, one time, me and this feller jumping the train, I swung up on into it, and he usually hit the wall inside the boxcar, but the other door had been opened, so I flew right clear through the train and tumbled down the other side, and I hit a rock so damn hard it put a dent in my skull." And I was like, "Oh, that must be hard." You know, I'm just like talking like an old man. Yeah, like,
sure.
And he has me put my hand on his head and feel on his skull where he had a dent from that. Oh. He's like, "Pretty bad, huh?" I was like, "Yeah, sure is." And yeah, just kind of didn't say a whole lot because I was afraid I was going to give it up that I was a guy in a mask, you know, but.
Touch my head. Yeah. Let me touch your head now. Maybe not.
"Feel how my head feels like rubber. Because it's made of rubber and plastic."
It's kind of an adorable story because it's just like two old men, and one probably thinks, "You've lived life too. A couple of old guys. We should be dead by now. Let's talk about what happened." And it's also like, that guy should be sharing with a young man. Get that story out there. Another old man, the story's not going to keep going.
Little did he know. But yeah, that was one of the most magical moments that we had during the shooting, that I had anyway. And I mean, there's a million stories, but one of the other, my favorite ones is Harmony's assistant Scott was, we drove by this little farm kind of house area, and there's a bunch of goats out there, and Harmony was like, "Let's get those goats in this thing. Let's, like, maybe you guys could hump on a goat or something."
Oi, oi, oi.
We're like, "That'd be great. Let's do that." So Scott goes back there later that night to scout the location and talk to the goat man and find out if we can shoot on his property. And he can't get a hold of it. He knocks on the door. He walks around back. He can't. And then he walks around the back of the house, and there's like a all the goats are dead, and they're hanging off the back of the deck, and the guy has slaughtered all the goats, and he's like, I guess he's selling them for their meat or something.
Holy crap.
Oh my God.
He approaches Scott. Scott's a super nice guy, and was just a really good natured dude, and he walks up to Scott with blood all over his hand. He tries to shake Scott's hand, and Scott's like, oh my God. So Scott comes and meets us later. He's just traumatized. He's like,
yeah.
Oh, I went back in the back, and there was covered in blood, and there's goats bleeding out everywhere. And we're like, Jesus. Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I love it.
The classic indie film goat slaughter story.
Did you guys film that in the summer? Were you guys hot in those outfits? Or?
Yeah. It was pretty brutal some days. You'd pull the mask off and everything, and then you could just, like, pour sweat out of it. Yeah.
That's why I love this world so much, because there's a man out there who slaughtered a farm full of goats. When he's approached, he'll try to shake your hand still, blood and all. I mean, I just can't believe that this guy wouldn't be like, well, sure, he got blood on my hands, so maybe I'll shake. Like, he was like, name's Charles, and you are? It's like, what? What? I mean,
that is crazy.
I got a question for you. So you went to Watkins Film School?
Yeah, Watkins Film School in Nashville.
I have a little notes on you. Yeah, so you went there?
Yeah.
And you were like, what, 19? Young man. Yeah. Young man there.
Yeah, I was 19, right out of high school. I guess I was 18 when I started. And Watkins was downtown Nashville, which now has been torn down. They built a beautiful public library there. But in the interim, they were building a new campus, and we were put in a furniture warehouse that they had converted into being our film school. So,
it's college.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Whoa.
That classic furniture warehouse college story. And so we were there, and in the midst of being in school there, me and this other guy, Blake McClure, who's a great director of photography, he works all the time, heard about the Coen brothers making O Brother, Where Art Thou? Down in Jackson, Mississippi.
Yes.
And so we submitted resumes and all that kind of stuff, and they didn't need anybody. But I found out this girl in my writing class had a job splitting a paycheck as an extras wardrobe assistant down there. So
you found a way in.
I did. I begged her to let me come ride in the car. I didn't hardly know her. This girl, Carrie, in April. And I rode down there to Jackson, Mississippi with her, just thinking there'd be like some guy in an office with like a cigar, be like, what are you doing here, kid?
Right.
Get out of here. But we got on to the cast and crew opening party, and then I met this woman, Nancy James, from Nacogdoches, Mississippi, and she was the craft service lady, and she said, well, honey, you can just come work with me.
Oh, my God.
So I was the craft service intern on O Brother, Where Art Thou?
What?
But you figured it out. You figured a way in.
I got in there. Amazing. I got in there.
When I saw that you were in school for 2 years and then you worked on that, I was so curious. I was like, this is the luckiest move ever. What a great move.
It was.
And you were the assistant to craft services. So
I was.
You would.
Yeah, I'd bring the Coen brothers a coffee in the morning. And, Roger Deakins, the DP, he liked his tea just so. And, Joel and Ethan liked their coffee a certain way. And Nancy knew how to make it. And I'd bring it to them. And then, Frances McDormand was on set all the time with Joel. She's married to Joel. And her son Pedro was like, I think, 3 at the time.
Mm.
And I'm wearing a cowboy hat and running around, and I think he thought maybe I was a cowboy. He was not.
Not
wrong.
I was going to say, you were in a cowboy.
Yeah. And so I got along with the kid really well, and I ended up watching the kid sometimes. And then Fran hired me on her next movie as her assistant, and then I worked with the Coen brothers on the next movie after that, and about 5 years went by working with them from...
This is great.
What? You worked for the Coen brothers for 5 years?
Well, 3 different movies. So over the span of 5 years. When
oh, my God.
We did O Brother, and then The Man Who Wasn't There, and then worked on a little bit on Intolerable Cruelty. And
I can't believe that.
They're wonderful people. Still go visit their sets sometimes. And, I'll see them, and it'll be like a decade, and they'll be like, hey, Travis, how's life treating you? Like, that's it. And I'm like, hey, how's it going?
Yeah.
There's no fanfare, but they're just the coolest guys in the world. It's the most straight up, nice, honest, working people, And of course, some of my favorite filmmakers of all time.
Mine too. I mean, that's amazing too.
That's cool.
I like that you went out and you had an idea and you wanted to work there and you found a way.
I'm glad that myself at 19 with braces and all was tenacious enough to just go, Carrie, right? Can I just ride in your car down there? I had, like, you know, enough money for, like, a Greyhound ticket home. That was it.
Well,
I got lucky.
You did get lucky, and it paid off. I mean, what would have happened if you didn't get hired? You would have just went back home, and you would have been fine. So this is the thing to kind of think about. Just do it.
Yeah, just do it.
What the hell?
Things, yeah.
Yeah, what the hell?
Go wherever you find out the thing that you want to do is, and go be around it as much as possible.
You moved to L.A. after the Coen brothers?
Yeah, so I was 20, and I came out here and worked for Fran, and I was her driver. I've never driven in L.A. before, and, you know, there's no GPS. I had a Thomas guide.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This guy let me sleep behind his couch at, like, I think Santa Monica and La Brea over across from Pink's hot dog stand.
Yes.
And this guy that I met in Nashville, the tour manager, he was like a total badass dude. He was like scary. He had this little apartment up there, but he was so nice to me because he knew this band that I was friends with. And he was like, just come stay with me, man. No problem. And I slept on a sleeping bag behind his couch. And I think he was involved in some pretty spooky shit. I think he was like maybe a coke dealer or something, because he'd be out all hours of the night till like 4 o'clock in the morning. And I wake up at like 6 to go pick up Fran in like Santa Monica, and he'd be just getting home. But he was so nice to me. Him and his girlfriend were so sweet to me and let me stay there. And
was Fran paying you? Or?
Yeah, the production paid me like $100 a day or something to be the driver, and I was sort of on call. But Fran's so cool, man. She's the best. Remember I showed up wearing like a kind of a nice shirt the first day? And she was like, what are you wearing this shirt for? What are you doing with this shirt? Don't do that. Come on. Let's get to work, you know?
She threw it off. You had to drive without a shirt on.
Yeah. And so I would drive the route. I'd get drop her off at home. And I don't know if she knows this, but I would drive the next route the next day, like where I'm supposed to go, Pasadena or wherever it was going to be. I'd drive there just to make sure I knew where it was.
That's smart. This is a man who wants to keep a job. So after the driving, is that when you made The Arm, the first short film?
I'd met some friends at a party. That was incredible. It was, I want to make sure I get all their names right. It was Sarah Ramos, Jesse Ennis, and Brie Larson directed this short. This is before Brie did like Room or Short Term 12 or these movies, and of course now she's Captain Marvel. And Jesse and is just lovely. She's a great actress, and her dad John Ennis agreed to be in it. He's, you know, from Mr. Show, awesome actor.
I know John.
We know John.
Yeah,
he was in Maddie's short
Jesse
film
too.
Yeah, they're both great.
And Brie
and Sarah was on Parenthood. They just had this thing they made up. They would shoot stuff all the time. They're really creative group of kids, and I was more of an AD on that, but I asked them to give me a producer credit because I wanted it, and they told me later that I tricked them into that, and they're right, I did.
So now we have Still the King.
Right.
Billy Ray Cyrus, Still the King, you created a television show.
Yeah, that was crazy. It all started where there's a producer we know from Nashville named Shannon Houchins. He runs a record label there called Average Joe's, and he was out here talking to Billy Ray about distributing a record, and Billy Ray was like, you know, I got an idea for a TV show. And Potsy, who runs the production company that he owns with Shannon called Hideout in Nashville, he went and had lunch with Billy Ray and Shannon. And Shannon goes, you know, I got this idea called Nash Vegas is what he was calling it. He gave the script to Potsy, and Potsy looked it over and called me. And he's like, you know, and I read it. We kind of talked about it for a while, but didn't really commit to anything. And then I was in Nashville, and I directed a music video, and I missed my flight back to L.A. It was like a red eye. And Potsy calls me out of the blue, and he goes, hey, man, where are you doing? And I'm like, I missed my flight. Potsy kind of talks like this. I said, I missed my flight. He goes, that's perfect. They want to see a script in the morning. And I was like, wow, man, really? And he's like, I'll pick you up. And he picks me up. We got a 12-pack of beer. We went to his office, and we wrote till about 4 o'clock in the morning. We wrote like 26 pages, and he was like, let's just write whatever we want. So I'm like, all right.
One day.
That was the initial pilot script we pitched them. And I thought, there's no way they're going to make this, because he was like, all right, fine. Billy Ray wakes up naked in a creek with a bottle of whiskey, and he's crashed a truck, and he's got two hookers with him, and there's pills and cocaine, and he's got a daughter who he didn't pay child support for because he didn't even know he had her 15 years ago from a one-night stand and all this craziness, and he's lying to a church and saying he's their preacher when really he should be doing community service there, and he's stealing from the congregation to pay his child support, and all this mess he's in. And I thought Billy Ray would be like, I can't have all that. You know,
he's like, I like it.
Yeah. You know, I went back to L.A. and about 3 weeks later, Potsy called me. He goes, hey, I heard back from Billy Ray's people. And I'm like, what are they saying? He's like, they love it.
Oh, my God.
So I was like, here we are. We went and met Billy Ray in Tennessee at his farm. And he just was great. And we had 2 great seasons of TV. We did 26 episodes. I played his sidekick, Walt, who's like a redneck conspiracy theorist.
That's great.
Wait, is it on Amazon?
Yeah, it's on Amazon and iTunes.
It was CMT, right?
Yeah, CMT was the network.
Kevin Brennan have...
Yeah, do you know Kevin?
I know Kevin real well.
Yeah, Kevin's great. He was one of... Not only was he a writer on both seasons, he was a head writer with his writing partner, Doug Manley, second season.
I know Doug, too.
Yeah, Doug's great. They both acted in the show.
That's great.
Two of my favorite characters on the whole show.
Yeah, I know that whole crew. They're really nice. Jeff Grace, all these guys.
Yeah, Jeff Grace got a cool podcast, too, that called Self-Obsessed, which is about self-improvement. And
I like that.
It's really, really cool, yeah. That whole group. When I met those guys 5 years into living in L.A., that changed everything for me as far as having a great, reliable group of friends. They're all real productive.
So you're friends with all those guys.
I know all those guys. And then
Marcus Jones.
Majestic Jones. Yeah, we're all going to Las Vegas for Todd Berger's 67th birthday.
Oh my God. He's not that old.
No, he's not that old.
I know all those guys so well that I slept in the garage of Kevin Brennan's house.
For how long?
Like 6 months or so.
Really?
Yeah, really good friends with Marcus. I've helped him move a million times. Uh-huh. Friends with those guys in Chicago. So I love all of those guys. They're the nicest guys.
Yeah, Blaze Miller.
I love Blaze.
You know, all those guys are just great. We hang out all the time. Yeah,
that's great.
I lived with Blaze for like 8 years.
In L.A.?
Yeah, in that apartment on Melbourne.
I've been there.
Melbourne, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's
small
a great,
world.
Great crew. They had this group called the Vacationeers.
Oh, yeah.
And when I first met them in L.A., I'd made a bunch of little stupid short videos and stuff, and so had they. And so we like compared notes. And then not even a year later, we were in Nashville making our first feature film called Super Zeros that, Kevin was in and Jeff was in. And,
right.
Reese Daniel Thompson.
I love him.
And everybody came in and did that. It was great.
That's awesome.
That is cool.
What are you working on now?
So after Still the King, I'm working on a pilot. It's sort of like Stranger Things meets True Detective.
That's a good combination.
Yeah.
It's a pretty strange thing. And then I got a movie called The Mattress King we're developing. A buddy of mine, Wes Edwards, who's a fantastic director out of Nashville, we're working on that script. It's about a guy who inherits his uncle's mattress store, like a mattress warehouse franchise. Sort of this whimsical medieval world he's created. He kind of has to adopt that and figure out what to do with that. Yeah, and I'm working on a podcast about country music. I don't know what it's going to be called yet, but I'm pitching the idea, Shoot Me Straight, getting the straight story about what really happened and these stories we've all heard about country music.
Can you get your dad on that show? Is it?
Oh, yeah.
You can get him on there.
So so you worked on Straight Outta Compton? Were you in that?
Yeah. My God. So I had to go down there like 3 times because I was such an afterthought. My scene, I played a police officer, Georgia police officer, and had this big monologue about decency, like, you know, no person shall abide in a bit by the blibber jabber jibber deer. Like this big, long, like technical dialogue kind of thing. And I had a police dog and all these police people around. Then I had to go down there and wait all day to shoot because it was such a huge set and they were doing all these big things down at LA Center Studios. And I'd be in this little a little milk carton thing they had me in.
Yeah.
And there's all these police officers down there. And I suspect that there was a little bit of a vindictive quality about you guys are all cops, you know, like Dr. Dre and Snoop and that's
Ice Cube.
And so I went up to the director, F. Gary Gray, and Ice Cube are sitting there, and they're checking me out as a cop, and they're like, and I've got a mustache. I mean, I look just like an 80s cop, you know? I got a mustache, my hair's kind of curly, and it's perfect. I look like a total idiot cop from the 80s. No offense to idiot cops from the 80s. And they're like, man, you need to shave your mustache off. I'm like, man, if you shave my mustache off, I'm going to look like a 12-year-old, I promise. And they're like, no, you look like too much fun with that mustache. I'm like, okay. So they go shave my mustache off. I come back, and they're like, dude, you look young. And I'm like, I told you. They send me back to makeup again, and they stipple fake stubble back onto my face again.
I love that.
And then we shoot the scene, and I'm not sure it made the cut. But don't tell anybody, because I still get royalty checks from that movie.
That's wild.
I think I'm a cop in the cop montage. You know?
A cop.
Yeah.
They have a cop montage.
Anyway. Do they really?
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Straight out of Compton. They didn't like
so
the cops.
So you worked with Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, that was crazy. So so I auditioned for a movie for Jersey Boys as a reporter.
Mm-hmm.
And then I didn't get it. And my manager called me and she was like, hey, they want you to put yourself on tape for playing a country singer. And so I filmed it in my bedroom. I hung a sheet behind me, you know, and like, and I, they said, play part of a composition in one of the Jersey Boys songs, and then play a country, a piece of a country song, like, you know, a minute and a half of a country song. I think I played it 50 times, and then I would get hot and start sweating, and I'd have to turn the AC on, and then, because it was so loud, and then, you know, and then I'd like wipe off my face and try again, and I was so nervous. I wanted to get it just right, because I know how much Clint Eastwood loves music, and I kept on, I was playing a John Prine song called Sabu Visits the Twin Cities Alone, because it's about a kid in a movie. It's like a Hollywood story, that one of my favorite John Prine songs.
And so, he would probably know this story, I'm assuming.
Probably.
Right.
I would
right.
assume he might even know the song, you know. Anyway, 40, 50 takes later, I just turned in whatever I got. I was kind of bummed about it. I was like, I don't know, whatever, you know. And it's on my, like, old iMac. I filmed it. And I sent it, and then didn't hear anything for a few weeks. And then out of the blue, you know, how it goes, my manager's like, you're on hold for that Jersey Boys movie. And I was like, what?
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
And like 2 days later, I'm driving down to the, you know, the back lot. I get there and they're like, okay, we need to send you to learn the song you're going to sing. I didn't even know that on the day we're shooting, I didn't even know the song I had to sing.
Oh my God.
So they send me in this guy, and then he's an awesome music supervisor. He's like, okay, here's the song. He sings it to me, just a cappella. Sort of this like operatic kind of like Broadway voice. He's like, why are you leaving? She's gone. Come on, she's gone. And so I kind of learn it, and I go, and they're like, do you have a guitar? And I'm like, yeah, luckily you don't have a guitar. So I go and get my guitar out of the car, and I go in, I'm in my little tiny cubicle trying to play, learn the song. 10 minutes goes by. Knock on the trailer. You ready? We want to have you sing the song for the producers. I'm like, oh my God. Who do they think I am? What kind of musician do they think I am? So I have to go in this trailer, and it's like all these guys in this big double wide trailer thing, production trailer, and they're just all staring at me. And I come in there and I sing it like the guy singing. They're like, why are you leaving? And they're like, let me stop you real quick. On your audition tape, I feel like you sang in a really country voice. And I'm like, you want me to do a country? And they're like, yeah. So I'm like, why are you leaving? You know, she's gone. Come on, she's gone. They're like, perfect. That's great. And then I go back to the trailer, and then I'm back on the set, and it's Clint Eastwood standing there, and I have to sing the song in front of Clint Eastwood, ooh, like this yodeling redneck.
Thank God,
you know,
they told you first before you got the Clint.
And yeah, he was so nice, and he was like humming the song, and it's sort of like, you know, you can blink and miss me in the movie. I'm in a window as a camera crane goes up on this building, and I'm in the building singing as they go up. It's,
oh, cool.
And
that's awesome.
So we had to shoot it like 6 times, you know. To get the crane shot right. And then I had the guts to say to Clint, like, hey, would you mind if I take a photo with you? You know, I felt like such an idiot asking him that, but like, being a lot to my family, we're big fans of yours. And he looks at me, he turns to me, and he goes, go ahead. And I was like,
no,
you are. I couldn't believe it. I was like, you're messing with me. There's no way. And so I got a picture with Clint Eastwood.
That's amazing.
I look about 12 in it. And if you see my IMDb picture, it was like, there I am looking like a 12-year-old with a cowboy hat on.
It's pretty cool, though. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was
so
fun.
What advice would you have to other actors that are just starting out? What would you say to them?
I think learning how to listen to people is really important. If you are doing a scene with somebody, and you really listen to what they're saying to you. And also, bring yourself to the character. Like, don't try to be like, I'm going to have this out-of-body experience, and what would I do here? How would I feel about this? You empathize with the person you're trying to portray and bring your own personal feeling to it, and be as honest as you can. Just practice as much honesty as you can about how you feel about it. And don't be embarrassed about that, you know, just, you know, because it's just really, truly you doing it. So try to be as honest about as you can, you know.
Great.
That's
great advice. Yeah.
Thank you. Well, thank you so much, man.
Thank you.
For doing our podcast.
It's been an honor, sir.
Yeah.
Great
catching honor up
and a
with
pleasure.
You.
Yeah, you too, man.
Let's hang out more, man.
Absolutely. Right, let's do it. Yeah.
Thank you so much again, man. Yeah, I really appreciate all the things that you shared with us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Of course. And where can people find you online?
I've got a website. It's littlebrotherfilms.com. Yeah. www.littlebrotherfilms.com.
Instagram.
Travis History on Instagram. Yeah, and the Travis Nicholson on the Facebook. You can see all 83 of my followers there.
Congrats.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
You, buddy.
Bye.
If you like what you just listened to, please, for the love of God, go to our channel on Audioboom and iTunes, like and subscribe, and leave a review. We love reading reviews, good or bad, especially about Maddie. Speaking of interacting, find me on most social media sites. I'm at Anthony DeVries. That's at Anthony DeVries. You can find Maddie, too. He's on the sites as well, at Maddie Carteropel. If stranded on a desert island, and you can only choose to follow one of the two of us, make sure it's me. And as always, bye. Maddie.